Hello and welcome to Series 2 of the Nature Storyteller Podcast. Come in and take a seat. It's another cool but bright spring evening, and we are all together to share another story from nature folklore. This episode features local lore from the Lake District, a beautiful, scenic area in the northwest of England. And first, we introduce you to an elusive, mystical creature native to the lakes and one of the many legends from those deep, dark waters who have shared their magic with us here on the land. And it's also said to have a taste for ginger biscuits. Legend has it that the Lake District holds a secret so enchanting that if you listen carefully, you might hear a faint squeaking sound. Now, some believe it to be a myth, but others swear it's the sweet melody of the elusive Tizzy Wizzy. With its dragonfly wings, a hedgehog's body, bee antennae, and a fluffy squirrel-like tail, this adorable mythical marvel is said to reside along the shores of Windermere. Oh, and it loves ginger biscuits. Rumour has it that a Bowness boatman's first sighting of a Tizzy Wizzy occurred in 1900, and in 1906 a rare photograph of the creature was taken, which is still a topic of discussion amongst locals and tourists alike, even today. So, if you're wandering around Bowness on Windermere, keep your eyes open for the tiny Tizzy Wizzy. You might hear a subtle plip-plop on the lake, and that could be a sign that the Tizzy Wizzy is nearby. You see, they are excellent underwater swimmers and can occasionally be spotted leaping above the surface of the water. So if you see a small insect-like entity whooshing past you as you gaze out over Windermere, that could be a close encounter with a Tizzy Wizzy who can fly at the speed of a peregrine falcon. Tizzy Wizzies are a mysterious, magical, mythical, wild superhero of Bowness on Windermere, and people are still reporting sightings even today. The first known photograph of a Tizzy Wizzy was taken in 1906 when a Bowness boatman managed to lure the creature to Louis Herbert's photographic studio, which was opposite St. Martin's Church. And how did he lure the Tizzy Wizzy, I hear you ask? Why, with ginger biscuits, of course. The Tizzy Wizzy was said to have politely posed for the photograph before it quickly took flight out of the window to regain its freedom, and it whizzed back to the safety of Windermere. The boatman printed thousands of those postcards from that legendary photograph, and he sold them all to the tourists on his Windermere tours. So, when you are next exploring the lakes, keep your eyes open for a glimpse of this mysterious little creature, and make sure you have a ginger biscuit or two in your pocket, as you never know if or when you may spot a Tizzy Wizzy. I I hope you enjoyed meeting the Tizzy Wizzy. Our main story today comes from the Borderlands, which bridge the divide between the very north of England and the very south of Scotland. I first heard this story on a night just like this, when I was in the Lake District, gathered with friends to listen to a story, passed on by generations of storytellers, and now it is my turn to share the story with you. So, if you are sitting comfortably, take a deep breath, relax, and close your eyes as we share the fantastic tale of the lad who herded hares. Once upon a time, a small stone cottage stood high upon a hill in the borderlands that connect Scotland and England. In this little cottage lived a widowed woman and her two sons. Times were hard, work was hard to find, and although she tried, she couldn't always find enough food for her and her two sons, and sometimes she would go to bed without a meal and fall asleep with the tears rolling down her cheeks. As her sons grew older, they were able to work and help find food. One helped the farmer bring the cows back to the farm every evening, while the other helped the farmers take the cows out to the fields every morning. The farmer knew times were hard for the widow, and he paid her sons well for the work they did. They always returned home with fresh vegetables as a payment. One day, the eldest son, John, said to his mother it was time for him to leave the small cottage and seek his fortune in the world. His mother sighed, but she knew that children do grow up and one day they will leave home. And with a heavy heart, she said, "Okay, John, but before you go, take this sieve and old cracked bowl down to the stream and I will bake you a bannock bread that will be as big as possible with the amount of water you bring me." John took the sieve and he looked at the old cracked bowl that his mother had given him, and as he walked down to the stream, he was frustrated. He felt his mother was wasting his time with trivial activities when he had a whole world to go and explore. When he got to the stream, he placed the sieve into it and scooped up the water, which poured out just as quickly as when he had filled it. John thought he would use the bowl, so he placed it into the stream and submerged it with both hands until the water overflowed it. Then he lifted it and smiled to himself, but as he did, water was pouring from the large cracks in the old bowl, and soon it was empty. John was annoyed and he stamped his foot on the ground. "How am I supposed to gather water in these?" he said. "They are useless, and this is all my mother's fault." All this time, a bird was sitting in a nearby tree. It had been singing its song, and as usual, John had completely ignored it. But now, just for a moment, he listened. And he could hear what the bird was singing. "Plug it with moss and clog it with clay, and then you will carry the water away. Plug it with moss, clog it with clay, and then you will carry the water away. Plug it with moss and clog it with clay, and then you will carry the water away." on and on the bird sang until John said, "Oh, go away, you silly little bird. I am not doing what you tell me to do, for you are just a bird, and what do you know?" With that, the bird flew away. John spent the morning trying to fill the sieve and the crack bowl with water, but all to no avail. And by lunchtime, he was very irritable, and he decided to fill the bowl to the brim and run home as fast as he could. Now, John was a fast runner, and he could outrun most of the other children when they were at school. So, with his bowl full of water, John carried it level in both hands, and he ran back to the cottage as fast as he could. When he got home, he gave the bowl to his mother and he said, "There is the water you asked for. It has wasted my time. Bake my bannock and I will be on my way." His mother looked into the bowl and sighed. There were only a few drops left in the bottom of the bowl, and the sieve sat in the bowl and was empty. But she had said she would bake a bannock for John, and she did. But because she had so little water, she could only make a tiny bannock. It was no bigger than a peanut M&M. But she put a teaspoon of jam inside the bannock and wrapped it up before calling out to John, "Your bannock is ready for you." With that, John picked up the wrapped bannock, put it into his sack, and set off on his adventure to find his fortune without even kissing his mother goodbye. When William came back from his work on the farm, his mother told him that John had gone and had not said goodbye to either of them. William hugged his mother and kissed her cheek, and he said, "Please don't worry, Mother. I am here and I will look after you." John was now on his adventure to find his fortune. He travelled east but found nothing. No town or grand house. So he travelled north. But again, he found nothing. Turning to the west, he walked up the hills to see if he could spot a fine house or castle. But still, he saw nothing. John sat down under a tree. He was tired and he was hungry. He took the tiny bannock his mother had baked for him from his sack and he began to unwrap it when a bird called out to him from the tree. "Will you share some of your bannock with me? If you do, you can take one of my wing feathers to make a pair of pipes." "Oh, go away," said John. "I'm not sharing my bannock with you. You're just a bird, and I don't want your feathers. And what use would a pair of pipes be to me? I am on an adventure to seek my fortune. Go away and leave me alone." And you know, that is just what the bird did. John ate his tiny bannock and jam in one bite. Without chewing, he swallowed and it was gone. John got to his feet and said, "Oh, I'm still hungry. Oh, Mother, this is all your fault. Why did you bake me such a small bannock?" With that, he decided to head to the south, and he walked and he walked until the sun was about to dip below the horizon to the west, and it was then that he saw it. Far, far away in the distance stood a grand castle. "Oh, that's it," said John. "That will be where I find my fortune." Finally, as the dark of the night surrounded him, John arrived at the castle and he said to the guards, "I am John and I am here to find my fortune. Do you have work for a strong young man of good character? The guards, who saw many young men come to the castle with the same hopes and dreams, told him to wait at the gate and they would ask the king. And John did as they said. He waited, and after a very long time, the guards came back and escorted him to see the king, who said, "What do you want, lad?" John said, "I am looking for work. I am strong and I have a good character. I can herd cows, fix walls and clean stables, and I'm also a very fast runner. But I already have people who can do all of those things," said the king. "You are of no use to me." Then the king paused. "Unless," he said, as he pondered his thoughts, "unless you can herd hares for me. Have you herded hares?" Well, John hadn't, but he knew that he couldn't say that. And anyway, he thought, how hard can it be to herd hares? He was a fast runner and he knew how to herd cows. So he said, "Yes, Your Majesty, I can herd hares." "Oh, good," said the king. "I have 24 hares in the meadows south of the castle. Tomorrow, you will go to the fields and keep them safe, and then at night, you will bring them back here to the castle. Can you do that?" "Yes," said John. The king said, as a payment, John could marry the king's daughter. Wow, John was delighted. I mean, at last, he would find his fortune and he would marry a princess. He felt that he and the king were now friends and he would soon be part of the family and live in the big castle. But it was then the king said, "Well, that's sorted then. But if you don't return here with the hares tomorrow night, I will see it that you are hanged." As John caught his thoughts, he didn't hear the king say goodnight. And there he stood with only the guards for company. Wait a minute," said John, who didn't like the idea, but the king had already left the room. The guards took John to a small room, and without leaving him anything other than a jug of water, they shut and locked the door and left. John tried to sleep, but his tummy was rumbling and grumbling as he had only eaten that tiny bannock all day. But eventually he did fall asleep. When he woke up the following day, the sun was already rising in the sky. "Oh no, I'm late," thought John as he pulled on his boots and banged on the door, waiting for the guards to let him out. "You've missed breakfast," said one of the guards. And the other one sniggered. "We will take you to the castle gates and give you directions to the meadow," which is just what they did. John walked out of the castle following their directions, and sure enough, there was a beautiful meadow, full of wild flowers with a rainbow of colour and the sound of millions of insects as they busily buzzed about their business of the day. John sat down on a grassy bank and looked around the meadow. It took some time, but finally he saw the hares nibbling at the grass and herb stems. John counted them. He could only see 23. He counted again. No, definitely 23. And then he saw a small hare that was lame and it had matted fur on its back, feeding a long way from all the other hares. John's tummy rumbled again, and it was then that he had an idea. Quick as a flash, John grabbed the lame hare and immediately dispatched it before building a fire and roasting it. Then he ate the hare and felt full and tired, so he decided to take a nap on the sun-warmed ground under the tall grasses in the meadow. When John finally woke up because he was feeling chilly, the sun was already setting. He jumped up and thought, oh, I must get these hares herded up quickly. It was then that he thought for the first time, how am I going to do that? He didn't know. He tried luring them with dandelion leaves, but the hares were wary of him, as they had seen what had happened to the small lame hare. John ran towards the hares, but they just scattered in all directions. Then John tried to stalk the hares, creeping up on them through the long grass, but as he pounced, they just moved aside before running away. This continued until it was dark, when John thought, I am sure that if I go and explain things to the king, he will be okay and let me try again tomorrow. After all, it's dark and it's late, and he has virtually said I am part of his family now. So John returned to the castle. He walked by the guards who let him pass and continued into the main dining room. Dinner had finished and the staff had already cleared away. John was hungry again, and as he was thinking about getting some food, the king entered the dining room with the guards and said, Ah, John, it's you. Have you got my hares? John looked at the king and said, No. They were too fast for me today, but I am sure I will get them all tomorrow. Even the lame one, said the king. John paused and said, The lame one was dead. The king's face turned red with rage. Dead? What do you mean, dead? John thought to himself that if he said he had killed the small hare and eaten it, the king would indeed have him hanged. So quickly he said, It was lying dead when I got there. He thought that would make the king happy again. But the king paused and then turned to the guards and said, Have him hanged at first light. And that is what happened. Two years later, to the very day, William said to his mother, whilst they ate breakfast at their tiny table in the small cottage on top of the hill, Mother, I think it is time for me to go and seek my future. I know this will leave you alone, but I shall return regularly with food and leave Rary the collie to keep you company. His mother sighed. She had never heard from John again, and she didn't want William to leave, but she knew all the children would grow up one day and they would leave home. Okay, William, she said, but before you leave, go to the stream and gather me some water and I will bake you a bannock. Take this sieve and old bowl with you for the water. William thanked his mother for the implements and said that he would go to the stream. A little later, William had packed his sack with all his possessions before walking into the kitchen and picking up the sieve and the old cracked bowl, kissing his mother on the cheek and saying, Right, I'm off to the stream now to gather the water. Shall I take Rary with me? He will enjoy the walk. Oh, yes, please, said his mother, and William and Rary set off. When William got to the stream, he stood and admired the beautiful view of the rolling hills and the long grasses. He also watched a mallard duck with her ducklings make their way along the far bank before entering the water and swimming off downstream. William heard the beautiful sound coming from the nearby tree, and he saw a bird perched on one of its highest branches, singing the sweetest of songs. And as he listened, William could hear what the bird was singing. Plug it with moss and clog it with clay, and then you will carry the water away. Plug it with moss and clog it with clay, and then you will carry the water away. Plug it with moss and clog it with clay, and then you will carry the water away. Oh, you're a very clever bird, said William. That is exactly what I will do. And he knelt down beside the stream and he packed the moss into the sieve, filling all the tiny holes. Then William put his hands into the clay at the edge of the stream and began packing it onto the moss in the sieve before smoothing it with his fingers. William then filled the cracks in the old bowl precisely the same way before filling them both to the brim with fresh stream water. As he turned to leave, William looked to the top of the tree and thanked the bird for his wise advice and kind help. William returned to the small cottage with a bowl of water and a sieve filled to the very brim. His mother smiled and said, "I will bake you a bannock with this water," and that is exactly what she did. Once it was baked, she cut the large bannock into three big slices and filled each one of them with jam before she wrapped them up. And then she called out, "William, your bannock is ready." William had now finished all his jobs. He'd already packed his belongings and he'd spent time with Rary in the garden. As he entered the kitchen, he said, "Oh, Mother, that bannock smells so good. It would be good to have a freshly baked one whenever I return to the cottage. Thank you for baking it for me." And with that, he gave his mother a big hug, kissed her on the cheek, and said that he would return soon. He ruffled Rary's fur between his ears and said, "Goodbye, boy. Now, you look after Mother whilst I am away." And then he picked up his sack, popped the wrapped bannock into it, and he was on his way. William knew that there were no towns to the north and the east, and that only the sea lay to the west. So as the track to the little cottage joined the road, he turned south. After walking all afternoon, William came across a large tree at the side of the road. It was full of leaves, and the shade it provided was just what William needed. He sat down with his back against the trunk, took the bannock from his sack, unwrapped it, and took one piece of the flatbread. The jam oozed out of the sides as he bit into the bread. "Oh, that's delicious," he said. "Thank you, Mother." It was then that he heard the beautiful bird song coming from above him. And the bird descended the tree trunk and asked William for some of his bannock. "Well, yes, of course you can," said William, tearing off a chunk and crumbling it for the bird, who began eating the crumbs until they were all gone. "Oh my goodness, you are hungry," said William, and he tore away another large chunk of the bannock before crumbling it onto the ground. The bird thanked William and said, "Please, take one of my feathers and make a pair of pipes for yourself." "No," said William, "you're welcome to share my bannock, and I do not want anything in exchange." Once again, the bird hopped onto William's hand and held its wings out. "Please, take one of my feathers to make a pair of pipes. It will serve you well." A little reluctantly, William agreed, and he removed a feather as gently as possible. The bird looked at him and flew away, singing its beautiful song as loudly as it possibly could. William took a knife from his pack, stripped the feather, and made himself a pair of pipes with the beautiful feather. When he had finished, William blew into the pipes, and the sweetest melody of bird song came from them. William smiled. He gently packed the pipes into his pack with what was left of the bannock and continued walking towards the south. Sometime later, he arrived at the castle, and as he approached the guards, he asked for their help in finding suitable work. The guards agreed and took him to meet the king, who looked at William and said, "Well, lad, what brings you here?" William told the king that he was looking for work and would be happy to help the king in any way he could. The king nodded as this lad differed from the others who had come to him before. The king said, "Well, I've already got good people doing all my jobs, but I may have one job that would suit you. Have you herded hares before?" William looked at the king and said, "No, Your Majesty, I haven't, but I would be happy to learn." "Oh, good," said the king. "I have 24 hares in the meadow south of here. I want you to protect them by day and return them to the castle at night. Can you do that?" "I don't know, Your Majesty, but I am happy to try," said William. "Well, if you succeed," said the king, "you can marry my daughter." William paused and said, "Thank you, but only if she was happy with that arrangement." The king told the guards to take William to his room and turned to leave before saying, "Of course, if you don't return the hares to tomorrow evening, I will have you hanged." William looked shocked and bowed his head. That was not what he had wanted to hear. The guards took William to his room and gave him a jug of water before leaving. William sat on the small bed, took the bannock from his pack, and ate a second piece whilst he thought about his mother and hoped she wasn't worrying about him. William went to sleep and awoke early the following day. He left the room and the guards took him to the breakfast hall, but the king was not up yet and breakfast wasn't ready. So the guards took William to the front of the castle and gave him directions to the meadow. William walked in the early morning light and watched the sun rise. It was going to be another wonderful day. The birds were singing and the crickets were bringing the grasslands to life with their legs rubbing together as they welcomed the warmth of the new day. Soon William saw the meadow, and it was stunning, with cascades of colour from the wild flowers and the hum and buzz of the insects as they busily went about their business. William entered the meadow and sat down upon a grassy knoll. He just sat still and silent and watched the wildlife around him. From the hawks riding on the thermals in the sky to the tiny ants marching in a line as they went over a stick lying on the ground. "What a fantastic place," thought William as he looked around. It was then that he caught sight of the hares. They were in a clearing and all gathered together, having breakfast of fresh herbs and grass stems in the morning sun. William sat quietly, taken aback by their beauty, from the black tips of their ears to their stunning amber eyes and those long, powerful back legs. As they sat eating, the hares' noses twitched constantly, making their whiskers appear to vibrate and resonate in time with their nose twitching. The hares were relaxed and not concerned by William's presence. Then a small hare came to feed at the bottom of the grassy knoll. William could have reached out to touch it, but he didn't. He just watched as she ate the herbs that still had the morning dew on them. William could see that this hare was lame. Her back leg was frail, so she had been suffering for some time. Her white fur patches were a muddy brown that looked dark compared to the coffee colour of her fur, and the black dots were not the highlights as they were on the other hares. Her eyes were dull and her ears crumpled and laid down. William wondered how he could help her, and after a short while, as she searched for new herbs, and William took the last piece of his bannock from his pack and ate it. It was so good. After he had eaten, William decided to get the pipes from his pack, and he blew gently across them, and the sound they emitted was as clear as the bird song with a hypnotic melody. William was so fixated on the magical sound of the pipes that he hadn't noticed that the swans with their cygnets had left the river, come onto the bank and settled down with their cygnets on their parents' backs. It was then he noticed the ducks had begun to move, as if dancing to the music of the pipes, rocking from foot to foot before swirling around as if chasing their own tail feathers. The hawks that flew high above moved in time with the music through the air, and the crickets and insects provided a backing track in perfect harmony. It was then that William noticed the hares. They all stood together nearby and watched him play the pipes, and it was as if the melody had hypnotized them. And that is how William and all the meadow animals spent the rest of the day. The sun had passed across the sky and was starting to dip below the western horizon, as William thought he should be heading back to the castle. He picked up his pack and slung it over his back before putting the pipes to his lips and setting off, followed by the hares. As they continued towards the castle, William noticed that the small, lame hare was no longer with them. He stopped playing, and the 23 hares sat still on the path as he retraced his steps back towards the meadow. A short distance along the path, he saw the small hare had collapsed, and he rushed to her and checked. She was still breathing, but was exhausted and dehydrated. He put some water on his fingers and rubbed them around her mouth before picking her up and wrapping her in his jacket. He then carried her back to where he had left the other hares. Picking up his pipes, William began to play again, and they all set off towards the castle. The guards at the castle could hear the music coming from the south and looked on with interest, but none of them had expected the sight that was now before them, for it was William, and behind him were the hares, all walking along in an orderly manner. William and the hares passed the guards as he led them to the king's barn, where he took them in and gently shut the doors behind them. They were safe for the night. William then took the sick hare to his room, laying her on his bed and covering her with his blanket before walking down to the dining hall where he hoped to have dinner. As William sat alone at one of the big tables, the king came in with the guards. "Ah, William, it's you," he said. "Have you got the hares?" "They are in your barn," said William. "Well, show me," said the king, and he and the guards walked towards the barn. William followed them. When they got to the barn, the king opened the door, and inside the dark barn were 23 pairs of amber eyes looking back at him. The king was surprised, but he said, "I only see 23 hares. One is missing." "Yes, I know," said William. "The small hare is lame, and she collapsed from exhaustion as we returned to the castle. I couldn't leave her in the barn overnight, so I took her to my room, and she was covered up in my bed." "Show me," said the king, as he walked off quickly with the guards almost jogging to try and keep up with him. They went upstairs in the castle to William's room, and the king opened the door. What do you think he saw? There was a beautiful young woman lying in William's bed. William was shocked, but the king was emotional, and he ran to the bed, held her in his arms, and he said, "It's you, my daughter. You are back." And he hugged and embraced her. The king immediately called for a physician, then turned to William and said, "Thank you for returning my daughter to me." And he hugged William. When the physician arrived, the princess was up and on her feet, asking William to play the pipes. As William played, she danced around the room with a freedom of movement she hadn't enjoyed for years, and without a limp. The physician was dismissed, and the king took William and the princess to the dining hall, where they ate and danced well into the night. The next day, the king announced that William and his daughter would be married, and William asked if he could take his bride to his mother's cottage. On the way, William stopped the royal carriage and, from the boot, took out an old sieve and an old cracked bowl and went to the stream. He covered them in moss and clay and he filled them with stream water. The princess and the coachman looked at him totally bemused. Now William's mother was more than a little surprised as a royal carriage came along the track towards her cottage. And she walked out into the yard, wiping her hands on her apron, and she bowed as low as possible. Can you imagine her surprise when she heard William say, "Mother, please get up. I would like you to meet my bride, Princess Arabella." His mother stood up, tears in her eyes and rolling down her cheeks, and she hugged her new daughter-in-law and William. They walked into the small cottage. Still, William said, there was something he must do, and he ran back to the coach and picked up the sieve and the old cracked bowl, both full of stream water, and he handed them to his mother and said, "Mother, I said I would ask you to bake a bannock whenever I returned to the cottage, and here is the water." And that is the perfect place for us to end our story. We hope you have enjoyed our tales tonight. If you have a favourite story or a slice of local folklore you think we should be sharing, then please do get in touch. Our email address is hello@naturestoryteller.org. That's hello@naturestoryteller.org. Or if you would like to hear more stories from nature folklore, then please visit our website, which is www.naturestoryteller.org. That's www.naturestoryteller.org. The Nature Storyteller will return in May with more fascinating folk tales and stories from nature and folklore. Until then, keep safe and keep believing in the magic of storytelling. Thank you for joining us today at The Nature Storyteller. I hope our stories have taken you to a beautiful place, deep within your own imagination. And at the same time, I hope you've gained more knowledge about the natural world and wild creatures that share it with us. Storytelling has always been a way for our ancestors to share their understanding, learning, wisdom, and knowledge of their world. Through the generations, these stories have entertained, informed, and inspired people, and they continue to do so to this very day. Now it's time for me to return to the forest and begin a new adventure that I will share with you on the next Nature Storyteller podcast.